there are underground areas and that they don't share with people, but you know, they know, people know that this is there, but it's not something that they're going to come out outright and tell you.
Yeah, and however, now tell me about this creature inside the craft. Was it alive?
Well, this is what happened. Yes, it absolutely was alive. It had circled around three times, and by the third time, they realized they were going to be able to time when it was going to come right over them again. So they turned off their vehicle. They turned off all of their radios, and the one gentleman had the other officer prepare a spotlight. And he said, "Listen, as soon as that thing comes directly over us," he goes, "I want you to, you know, flood that thing with all the light that we have." And they had a countdown. They were timing it, and you know, 3, 2, 1, boom! They flooded this thing with light, and it hovered directly over them. He said the craft tilted downward, and whoever was in there stared directly at them, and then it shot off. And it wasn't until the second pass that they realized this thing was absolutely silent. It did not make a sound. And during the first pass, they thought a car was coming at them. Then they thought a train was coming at them. And it wasn't until they realized that there was this, you know, lavender, purplish color illuminated, you know, cockpit, that this was not a train or a car. So it was a scary thing for them. But again, the thing that struck me the most was that what really impacted this gentleman was not the what he described as a gray, but the fact that it was a hovering craft.
And teardrop-shaped.
Teardrop-shaped, and it was nearly identical to a sketch that Paul Bennett...
And it made no noise.
Made no noise.
And you have no reason to doubt that story?
Absolutely not.
I mean, you
absolutely
looked at the person's eyes when they told it. It's not scientific,
you know,
but you're pretty intuitive. You believe it.
This person drew a total of 19 sketches for me of what he has seen over the last 20 years in the area of Dulce, 10 of those years which he was a police officer for Dulce. Now he's a chief of police somewhere else. But there's no reason to doubt this guy. And, you know, he was so sincere and so, you know, forthright with his conviction about what he saw. And let me tell you something. His two sons were at the table with us. And no father would lie in front of their sons. I have two sons, and I would never lie in front of my sons. Never lie, period. And this gentleman is a very, very respected member of law enforcement, and I have every reason to believe him. And like I said, Janet Saylor was at the table, Rick Purcell was at the table, as were his sons. And
we have some callers lined up. We have some callers lined up, Anthony. Is it okay if we go ahead and open the phones?
Yes.
Okay, caller, you're on the air with Anthony Sanchez and Jerry Pippin. How are you? Is the caller there? Okay, the caller is about ready. Anthony, I want to get back to more of the ambience of getting up on that mesa in a moment, but first of all, let's take the caller. Hello, caller.
Yes, hey, Anthony.
Hi.
I really am interested in this, and it does explain a lot why average citizens don't see UFOs. You explain these holographic entrances, the military bases. If the military has it, why wouldn't the UFOs have the holographic invisibility? And I think that explains why we don't.
I think there's a lot of evidence that there's a shift shaping going on. What we see is not necessarily what we see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't you agree, Anthony?
I absolutely agree with that. And remember, what's happening here is that these entrances, there are actually physical doors. But when the physical doors are open, that's when these holographic projections come into place. And what you see is a projection of light that essentially, you know, disguises the opening. And that's what this officer was telling me. And then We already have this technology.
This technology. I just read an article on one science magazine a while back with the Army is actually able to put up a hologram and make the entire background look different than it really is.
That's right. They actually have cloaking technology that they're already using. And if you go to essentially Google and you go into the news section and you type in cloaking device, you'll see that there's scientists that have already created these invisibility cloaks with the ability to essentially bend light. Essentially, they're bending light. It's based on the same principle. When you see a mirage on a road, what they're doing is they're working with these sheets of carbon nanotubes to bend light around them that essentially render anything behind them invisible. It actually exists. Just go to Google and type in "scientists create invisibility cloak." The technology already exists.
Okay, thank you, caller. Anthony, when you were up there on top of this mesa, everything you saw, you figure was real? I mean, that's a silly question, but maybe it's not. You know what I mean?
I'll tell you what. Yeah, no, absolutely. One of the things that we found up there, and I have photographs of this, and I'll be releasing them on the website, was this shack. Now, I asked my guide, I said, is that some sort of a hunting shack? And he said, you know what? We don't know who put that shack there. No one from the Jicarilla ever used that shack. It's not from the Utes. It's not from the VLM.
Is it like a guard shack?
It's kind of, it looks like it could be a hunting shack, you know, like a small hunting lodge. But he told me, and this is a guy that takes people up there, he goes, we don't know who put it there. It just showed up there. And guess what? It's directly adjacent to the military containers that we found.
Now, let's. We haven't told the audience about this. Let's tell them what you found up there. It's pretty incredible. And it's you're the first researcher, I think, that's found actual evidence of U.S. government involvement.
That's right. Now, think about it. Any U.S. government property, not on BLM land, but on sovereign Jicarilla land, that's there illegally. And I confirmed this with law enforcement from the Jicarilla Apache Nation. So we found two massive steel military-grade containers. And I said, what the heck are those? What are these things doing up here? And sure enough, I mean, completely out of place. They are shipping containers for F-5 jet engines. What are they doing up there? We don't know. Underneath one of them, there were slats of wood, and we can feel air coming up from beneath it. Was there a shaft? We couldn't tell because these things are so damn heavy we could not lift them.
So you're thinking it might be over some sort of opening?
We believe so. One of them, at least. One of them. There's one that was under a tree. That one, we don't know what it's doing there. And then there's another one adjacent to it about, I would say, 30 to 40 feet away. That one had wooden slats underneath it, and we felt air coming from underneath it. Now, were these put there because they were so heavy that the military knew that it would prevent anybody from being able to lift them and expose what's underneath them? I'm not sure. But it is...
I mean, they definitely didn't get them up there by road, I don't think. Maybe they did.
Absolutely.
I mean,
no, they're massively heavy. Listen to this, Jerry. This is irrefutable proof that the United States government is up there. We don't know what they're doing up there. We don't know why, you know, these shipping containers are up there, but there are military-grade steel shipping containers for F-5 jet engines. What are they doing in the middle of a cow pasture?
Well, I think you sent me an email that you could make out the serial numbers. Am I incorrect?
Yeah. Now, I sent you, Jerry Pittman, Mel Fabregas, and several other media people, the full-blown high-def images that show the numbers and everything. Now, on my site, I'm not releasing those numbers, and I ask that you guys don't either. And here's the reason why. We are still conducting an ongoing investigation into the federal serial numbers, the federal serial plating of these containers, because we're trying to understand why they're there, how they got there, and who put them up there. And we don't need scrutiny from outside investigators at the moment. We want to conduct this investigation using scientific methodology, and that's why I'm asking that you and all the other media personnel that I sent those to, the enlarged higher definition pictures, not to disclose the numbering to anyone at this time, because we're conducting an ongoing investigation.
But you're pretty convinced, and we don't want to blow your investigation, but you're pretty convinced that those are jet engines for military aircraft.
Yeah, we're pretty convinced. For the F-5 jet engine, based on the serial numbers that we found.
I wonder why they would be up there. I mean,
we don't know. We have absolutely no reason. We don't understand why they're there. But the curious thing is there's this shack that our Hickory guy, who's been, you know, going up there, well, his whole life. He's got to be about, what, almost 45 years old now. He's been going up there his whole life. He says that shack disappeared out of nowhere a couple of years ago. And it looks, here's the thing. He says it's only been up there a couple of years, but it looks like it's 40 years old. He says whenever somebody from the nation erects a hunting lodge, you know, it stays in pretty good shape for at least 10 years. This thing said just showed up, and it already looks like it was purposely disguised to not be attractive to people, to not want to use it. So we just didn't make our way up to it. We just couldn't get up to it. Our time was limited, and we just had to focus on the containers. We really needed to focus on the containers. But
okay, let's open up the phone lines here. Let's open up the phone lines and take some phone calls. 888-919-BELL. That's the number, 888-919-2355. If you have a question or a statement for Anthony Sanchez, we'd like to hear from you. Anthony, were you afraid at all while you were up there? I guess not. You had authorities from the Indian Nation there.
No, I was not afraid at all. We were with a former law enforcement of the Hickory Apache Nation, a law enforcement officer, a police officer. I had no reason to be afraid. You know, one of the things he told me was that he had a hunting party up there, and they were confronted by, now this is in the summer, he had a hunting party up there, and they were confronted by three men in military garb. He could not tell from what branch of the military they were from, but they told them that they were violating a restricted area and they needed to vacate the premises. And he turned around and told them, no, this is Hickory Apache land. We have every right to be here. I'm a Hickory Apache. And they said, not today, you're not. They said, you're violating a restricted area and you need to vacate the premises immediately. And their guns were pointed at them. So this is pretty serious. I mean, that's a violation of sovereign land. Who the hell does the military think they are, you know, invading sovereign land and telling these guys to vacate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I think we have another caller. Let's go ahead and take that call. And Anthony, I want to follow up on that a little bit after the phone caller here.
Uh-huh.
Hi, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Jay. Anthony, I am very interested in this. Why don't you think, UFO hunters or anybody, we don't really know about those. All we really know about is Area 51 and, why isn't...
Well, yeah, UFO hunters did a show about Dulce last year or year before. And we have Jesse Ventura and his crews trying to do a show on it. They'll probably do it on their conspiracy files coming up in January.
Show. I mean...
We've been doing shows on Dulce forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anthony, maybe you want to chip in here. It's secret, but it's not secret. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Area 51 is what people really know about. They don't really know about Dulce.
Yeah, the thing about Dulce, which is so intriguing, is that there's such a high level of mythology surrounding the place. You know, you have the Hickory, which have all these myths and these legends about creatures that they've seen, from Bigfoot to small little devils that they call them, you know, which we attribute to being greys. Then you have this story that emerged, from this whole reptilian camp that talks about, you know, Nightmare Hall and all these other things and this whole reptilian aspect to it. And again, you know, our source says that none of that is true, other than you know, the Phil Schneider involvement, which is true. Phil Schneider did actually work at the facility. So you have this whole mysterious aspect to the underlying story of Dulce. So I think that's what makes it so intriguing. But again, here's what's even more interesting about Dulce than I think even more so than, you know, Area 51. The fact that you have people like Norio Hayakawa who went up to Dulce with a camera crew and were arrested, were detained by law enforcement. And then, these interesting scenarios play out. Then you have these other two investigators who were on UFO hunters that went up there, and they were also detained. And then when one of them, I think his name was Bob, asked, this law enforcement officer, was he there during 1979? The law enforcement officer looked him straight in the eye and said, "I'm not allowed to talk about it." So, there's just this mystery to Dulce. And now I had the honor of meeting this individual who says he actually worked at Dulce. And he gave me this, litany of information. And there's just so much information there to try and, research. And it's part of what, compels me to want to find the truth. And I think that we have finally stumbled on a piece of evidence that is irrefutable proof that the government is there. We found military-grade steel shipping containers for F-5 jet engines on the plateau of the Mesa, less than 1,600 feet away from the radio towers. Something's there, not to mention the fact that we have probably over 20 witnesses that we interviewed in Dulce, but we didn't interview them in Dulce. We were not allowed to interview anybody in the township. We had to interview them over in Taos or in Chama or in Lumberton outside of Dulce. That was one of the restrictions. I do not know why that was placed upon us, but we honored it and we respected their wish. We did not interview anybody inside the township of Dulce. All interviews were conducted outside of Dulce.
Our telephone number for Anthony Sanchez and Jerry Pippin is 888-919-BELL, or you can just dial 2355. It's 888-919-2355. We have Facebook and Twitter going as well. And also, if you want to email me personally, at jerry@jerrypippin.com. And I just got an email personally from Janet Saylor, who's listening. And Janet tells me that you were pretty ill in Taos and actually checked into the hospital. Are we letting something happen we shouldn't talk about?
No, it's okay. Yeah.
What was the problem?
Well, everything was fine. After we went to Dulce and conducted our investigation, that evening, I would say it was the evening of the 25th. Was it the 25th or the 24th? No, it was the evening of the 24th. It was the day after the primary investigation. I came down with an intense headache, and it was just unbearable. I could not handle the pain. I had to check into a room over at the Best Western Inn because we were going to stay. Rick ended up staying with the family that was hosting us in Dulce. These are Jicarilla people. I, unfortunately, was in so much pain, I had to check into a room. I just could not, I didn't want to be, a hindrance on these people. I didn't want to impose on them with all of my, all that was going on that evening. The next morning, the pain was worse. We conducted another investigation, then we left for Taos. By the time we arrived at Taos, I could barely leave my room. I think the only time I left my room was to try and have a drink and smoke a cigar, and it wasn't happening. And then I ended up going on the air with you. And the next morning, and I collapsed after that interview with you. I just physically collapsed from the pain. I was in a sweat. I just was sweating profusely. And my hearing was coming and going. My vision was coming and going. The next morning, I woke up, and I had a full-blown paralysis on the left side of my face from my neck all the way up to the top of my head. I just could not move anything. I was paranoid that I had a stroke, so I immediately went to the emergency room at the hospital there in Taos, and they ran tests, and they told me I didn't have a stroke. And then they said the strangest thing. They said, one of the doctors said, well, it could be something called Bell's palsy. know, this is the physician's assistant who said that. But the doctor says, I don't think so. What he has is not consistent with Mel's palsy the way it came about. When I got back to California, I had a battery of blood tests that I underwent. They said that they had identified that I had been subjected to some type of a neurotoxin. They thought, okay, well, maybe I was subjected to, like a pesticide to get rid of ants or wasps or something. But they said that if that had been the case, they would have been able to identify the chemical signature. And in this case, they haven't. So I'm still undergoing, right now I'm on Vicodin, and I am on a ton of different types of steroids, primarily prednisone. I'm going to be seeing a specialist soon. But I want to just give a shout out to all the healers who have come forth and have helped me. I have to tell you, several healers have come forward and have done some work on me and have made me feel tremendously better, and I am forever grateful for them and to them, and I thank them for that. It was really an unprecedented level of support that I got from the healing community, so thank you.